success. Fitness Together in Northampton and Amherst.
This is Bill Newman, WHMP.
We welcome to our show Dr. Joanne Levin, who is the Medical Director of Infection Prevention at Cooley Dickinson Medical Group, and Dr. Esteban Garcia, who is the Chief Medical Officer at Cooley Dickinson Hospital. Doctors, thank you both so much. I know you are tremendously busy, and we really appreciate your time for us and for the community this morning. Can you tell us, from your perspective, where do we stand in the valley now, today, with regard to this epidemic, this pandemic? We'd appreciate an overview from either or both of you. Let's start with Dr. Levin.
Well, we're anticipating this epidemic, and so far there have, last I looked on the DPH website, there were no cases in Hampshire County, but we are so preparing that it will be here, and we're fully expecting that it will be here. We just have not seen any positive cases yet. As you're aware, there's limitation for testing. And in our community, at our hospital, we are limited by something called viral transport medium. We have enough stuff.
Well, could you get just maybe a millimeter farther away from your phone, I think? That might make our...
Sure.
That's better.
Is that better?
That is better. Okay. Say that again for us, please, what you just said.
So we're fully expecting that this epidemic will come to our community. Last I looked on the website, DPH puts out their statistics every day. I looked about a day ago, and there were no cases reported from Hampshire County. But I fully expect that there will be. As you know, there's a delay in testing as well as a limit in the number of tests that we can do. So the testing probably does not reflect what's truly going on in the community. At Cooley Dickinson, we are limited in our testing ability, not... by the state anymore, but by our supplies. We have a limited amount of what's called viral transport medium. We can swab someone's nose, but in order to send it to either the state lab or the Quest lab, we have to put it in viral transport medium, and we only have a certain amount of that to get us by until our next shipment, and we hope that shipment will come in. So we are currently limited in our testing ability, and we are prioritizing who we do tests on. And right now we're prioritizing our sickest patients, our inpatients who have viral syndrome or pneumonia, as well as our healthcare workers. The people on the front line need to be checked, and we certainly don't want to spread any disease within our medical community to our patients. So that's where we are right now.
Dr. Levin, there were reports in the Gazette yesterday about what appeared to be coronavirus cases. And when you say we don't have cases, I assume what you're saying is we don't have cases confirmed by testing through the CDC. Do I understand that correctly? We don't really officially have a case until it's confirmed either by the, well, I guess it's a presumptive test by the state lab and then a confirmatory test by the Center for Disease Control?
Right. So I think there's some confusion because I think there are some folks who said we have a presumptive case in our community, and what they mean by presumptive is, well, we think it looks like coronavirus. But that's not what the scientists and medical professions call presumptive. Presumptive positive, when reported by the DPH, is they have a positive test. They call it presumptive because it has not been confirmed by the CDC. But it's positive.
Do we have any presumptive positive cases in Hampshire County?
Not that I'm aware of. I didn't look at the website in the last 24 hours, but I don't think so.
So this is Dr. Garcia, and we certainly haven't, we have seen a bit of an uptick in the clinical manifestations and presentations coming in through and being admitted to the hospital, but as of yet, we don't have tests that are positive. Even as of this morning, all of our tests that we've sent from Cooley Dickinson have been negative.
Can you tell
us... Bill, can I just say one
sure.
thing? It's really important to know that it's really hard to distinguish COVID, which is the disease caused by this virus, from other respiratory viral illnesses. You really cannot tell them apart clinically. You know, a little cough, a fever, a body aches, that's consistent with flu. That could be RSV. There's about a million viruses that can cause that, particularly at this time of year. So based on clinical symptoms, you really can't tell. Unless people come in the hospital with a certain kind of pneumonia that's, you know, very more specific for COVID, the early kind of symptoms that people might have at home are really indistinguishable. You know, there's so many diseases that can look like that. We really can't say that there are or are not cases on a community until we have testing to prove it.
Can you, I don't know if this is intruding on privacy, but can you give us some indication about how many tests Cooley Dickinson has done for possible and apparently negative results for coronavirus, COVID-19?
Sure. This is Dr. Garcia again. I think that we've probably done less than a dozen tests over the course of the last, I think we started looking at testing less than 3 weeks for sure, but the less than a couple of weeks, sorry. But certainly we have up to this morning from what's been reported, and now they're kind of trickling in. They've been kind of batching them, but they're trickling in. We've had no positive tests, so less than a dozen since I've started monitoring this.
Tell us this, if someone is having respiratory symptoms, fever, and the other indices of either COVID-19 or other respiratory diseases, what should they do? Because if it's just a ordinary cold or the flu, well, the flu, I guess, can certainly be serious, but it's not as serious for the elderly population and other at-risk populations in our community. What should they do? Because coming to the hospital seems like a bad idea. So help us out on that.
Exactly what we do not want people coming to the hospital. Really, the goal is for people to stay home and do what they would normally do if they have a cold or flu kind of thing. They can either, if they're otherwise healthy, so to stay home and stay to themselves. We don't know what virus they may be having, but stay home. If they're feeling like they need medical care or they're unsure what to do, they should call their primary care provider who can give them some guidance. We're asking all primary providers to do a lot of triage, a lot of decision-making on the phone. And there's a lot that they can do really just with a phone call. They'll, based on the patient's risk factors and the symptoms that they report, whether they should stay home or come in. So if they need to be seen for medical reasons, they can be seen. But we certainly don't want them walking in and potentially spreading this disease to others in the healthcare system or other patients.
Just to give you a sense, I was in New York during the H1N1 outbreak in my emergency department. I'm a pediatric emergency medicine physician, and my emergency department doubled in volume in one weekend. And we really were unprepared to be able to take that number of patients from 150 to 300 a day. So, and the vast majority of those patients were worried that they had H1N1, but quite well. So what we're trying to do now, understanding that history, that people do get worried, is really encourage them to stay home, to use some Tylenol or acetaminophen. Lots of fluids is helpful, and monitor their symptoms and check in with their primary care providers. Cooley Dickinson will be conducting quite a bit of telephonic care, and be able to go through a nice checklist of things that people are worried about, and so that is starting as early as today, and in some cases it started before that in some practices, but we want to be able to connect with our patients and make sure they're doing well while they're sheltering at home or taking care of themselves at home. So that's really the important piece. If they are sick enough, short of breath, having trouble staying hydrated because of vomiting or diarrhea and really feeling weak, they need to be seen. We just need a heads up. Their provider needs a heads up, so their doctors or doctor's office should know they're coming in. They should call and say, I really feel like I need to be seen. And if it's through the emergency department, then they need to give us a heads up as well, and we will meet them as quickly as we can at the door. If they come by car, mask them and put them into an isolation room. And if not, then if they come by ambulance, then the ambulance will certainly give us a heads up. But important to limit that to those folks who really need emergency care so we can continue doing what we do every day and take care of patients.
Well, Dr. Garcia, help me with this. If you've called your primary care physician and that doctor says stay at home, do the following things which you've just outlined for us, how at risk is the person from a very severe and quick onset? Or does this happen gradually over time so that there would be, at least as a practical matter, a warning that you really have to get to the hospital that you are in dire condition?
Sure. So we know that, thanks, that's a really good question. We know that 80% of cases, again, out of China, the literature and the experience has shown us that 80% of cases will have very mild disease. So I think there's what I've told my friends and family members and colleagues is understand your individual risk. And so if you are somebody that's over 70 with chronic medical conditions, you are clearly at higher risk for severe disease. And in those situations, I'd say, you know, be more, make sure you have family members that you can contact and that will be checking on you, and you have some support that way, because you are at increased risk. If you're a 25-year-old with no medical history, your risk is certainly less. And so I think it's understanding your own individual risk. And then the reason we isolate, right, the reason we say let's stay at home for the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and really don't have a lot of interaction with others, self-quarantine for folks that are sick, is because we don't want to potentially spread that to others, especially those folks that are in the higher risk group. So in general, you have some time. The disease progresses. But I think that if you have higher risk, we want to know how you're doing. You should be checking in with your provider at least every day.
There are some young people out there that are still skeptical about the whole self-quarantine thing, as dangerous as this seems to be for older people. And they say things like, you know, why don't we do this every time there's a flu going around? Flus are dangerous for older people all the time. Why is this night different than all other nights? What makes COVID-19 and coronavirus, this particular coronavirus, something that we are taking such drastic measures for?
Well, it's different from flu in several ways. One is we have a vaccine for flu, and even older individuals who are at risk of bad disease from flu may be less at risk if they get a flu vaccine. The other is that, so we are all at risk. None of us, our bodies have not seen this virus before. We are all at risk of getting the disease. It's the older folks and those with underlying disease who are more at risk of having a worse outcome, having pneumonia, having more medical complications. And it is probably more easily transmitted than the flu. So I think it's really imperative that everyone understand, even the young, healthy people, that we're doing this for our community. We're trying to protect each other, and we're trying to protect, in particular, the elders. I mean, I used to teach sixth graders about sexually transmitted diseases, and I would say to them, it's not about who you are. I mean, you could be the smartest kid in the class. It's about your behavior and your choices. So if you're going to go out and party and have interactions with 20 people one night, you've dramatically increased your risk of disease. And then who else are you transmitting that disease to? So I think the message really for the public who are not sick now is to please stay home and limit your contacts. Every interaction you have out in public is a risk for contracting the virus. The virus can be transmitted person to person. That's why we say stick 6 feet apart. But also on objects. Someone who doesn't realize that they're sick or still goes out in public when they're sick, they put their hand on a counter or a doorknob or a whatever, and then someone else touches that and then touches their face, they can get the disease this way. This is called a fomite. It's sort of that third item in the equation. You can get it from a thing rather than just a person. And every interaction you have out in public increases your risk when the disease is out and about in the public.
We're speaking with Dr. Joanne Levin and Dr. Esteban Garcia. Dr. Garcia is the chief medical officer at Cooley Dickinson, and Joanne Levin is the medical director of infection prevention at Cooley Dick. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back, and I'm going to ask the question. We'll go back to Dr. Garcia and ask him about his experience in New York with the H1N1 virus, and want to ask if there is a real outbreak here in Hampshire County, is Cooley Dickinson prepared? Does it have the facilities and the resources to handle what could come? We'll be right back.
This is Bill Newman, WHMP.